And we're holding the chalk of page 86 in Sanhedrin, the first line, middle of Oiskuf. We learned yesterday about the some of the dinim that are involved when you have a person is on trial for Birkas Hashem. And we talked about the point that when a person hears the Birkas Hashem, or even if he doesn't hear it firsthand, even like the Dayanim, hear it from the Edim, then they have to tell Kriya. So now the Gemara continues on that topic. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Hashemeya Azkarim, if you're Oli Kechavim, a person hears Birkas Hashem, done by a goy, ain't a chai of the Kroya, he does not have to rip his clothes. The Im Toma Rav Shekei, you can ask, what about Rav Shekei, where we talked about yesterday that when Chizkiyahu's men heard him cursing out Hashem and claiming that Hashem is no more powerful than the gods of the other nations, etc., then they talk Kriya. The answer is Yisro Mumu, Hoya. This Rav Shekei was actually Yisro Mumu. He was a Yid who had Shmadzich and gone over to Sancheirev's side and become one of his top ministers. They say, by the way, Rav Shekei may stand for Rav as in the chief, Shekei as in Mashke, so he would have been like a Saramashkin. We find in various places that Saramashkin was actually quite an important official, so in that case, then he would have been, so that's what he would have been. But in addition, probably precisely because he's Yisro Mumer, is why Sancheirev picked him to go and give this whole diatribe against the Yidden and against Chizki and against Hashem and so forth. Anyway, so therefore, so that's why they had to take. And the Gemara continues, V'omer of Yehuda Mashmur ain't kurd an El Al Shem Am Yuchad Bilvad. Another din, you have to tear Kriya only when you hear the actual unique name of Hashem, the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, but not when he, La Puki Kinui Deloi, as opposed to a Kinui, any other secondary name of Hashem, like Kim, Shakai, any Mitzvokos, any of the other ones, then he wouldn't have to tear. The Gemara points out, now both of those dinim that Rabbi Yehuda is telling us in the name of Shmuel, that you don't have to do Kriya if it was a goy, and that you don't have to do Kriya if it was a kinui, that disagrees with Rabbi Chiya. Both of those dinim disagree with Rabbi Chiya. Da'am Rabbi Chiya, because Rabbi Chiya says, Hashemei azkora bizman hazeh, ein echai of the kroya. Rabbi Chiya says that nowadays, when a person hears a blasphemy or a misuse of Hashem's name, he doesn't have to tell Kriya. Because Rav Chiya says if he didn't say that, and then the person's entire clothing would be full of rips because they have all the time that people aren't afraid of Beis Din. People aren't afraid of Beis Din, especially nowadays there's no Mrs. Beis Din, and the Goyim are not afraid of Hashem, are not afraid of Beis Din in the first place, so therefore, so they're doing it. Habonav comments a little bit bitterly, you know, you see, unfortunately, you have many Jews who are careless with this kind of thing also, and throw Hashem's name around a lot, Levatola, in other languages as well. The name of Hashem in other languages counts as a kinui. God in English, for example, and the equivalents in other languages, but you're not supposed to just throw them around. You have, you know, people unfortunately do, and then that in and of itself is a problem.
Baruch Hashem?
Baruch Hashem is one thing. The name Hashem is not actually a name of Hashem. So that's a good thing. That's we acknowledge Hashem all the time. But to say, for example, people say in English, thank God. Is that the right thing to say when it's just on something casual? Maybe not necessarily. A person can say thank the one above or something. But certainly also you have a lot of times people throw around the name of Hashem in English very carelessly. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, in fact, points out, for example, by the same token, he says, for example, in French, how do you say one way of saying goodbye to a person in French? You say adieu, which means with God. So he says you shouldn't be doing that. Then it means you're using Hashem's name for without a valid reason.
As long as they're working.
Right, well, yeah. I mean, so in English, really, I mean, they say the word, the term goodbye also originally comes from the name of Hashem, but by now it's been transformed enough in English that it doesn't seem to be a problem with it, Lachora. So now the question is, again, Rav Chiya is saying that if you had to tear Kriya nowadays, then you'd constantly have to be tearing Kriya. So we have to figure, Miman, well, who is Rav Chiya talking about that would be talking like that? Ilema Yisrael, is he talking about that Jews would be blaspheming Hashem's name? Mipkiri Kolahai, would Jews be so disrespectful to Hashem? Fine, they may not be afraid of Beis Din, they may use Hashem's name casually when they're not supposed to, they're not going to go curse Hashem's name. Evidently, Rav Chiya is talking about that goyim. You're going to hear them cursing out Hashem all the time. Well, the ibe shemam yuchad. Now, if it was only that a person's chayev to tear only when he hears the shemam yuchad, migmiri. Do the Goyim Bechlal, are the Goyim Bechlal familiar with that name, that they should be using it all the time to the extent Reb Chiya would say constantly be after tearing Kriya? Ella La B'Kinui. Evidently, it means a Kinui, whether, again, we mean one of the other secondary names of Hashem in Lashon Kodesh, or more likely we mean their equivalent of the name of Hashem in their languages. Ushmamina Bizmana Zehu Deloi. Now, then the implication is Reb Chiya thinks that nowadays you don't have to tear Kriya, because otherwise it would be impossible to live. Hame Ikra Chayiv, implying originally back when there was at least a fear of Beis Din, then people would have had to tear Kriya Shmamina, so that shows. Reb Chiya holds that a person is chayav to tear Kriya when he hears it from a goy, and also, even if it's not the Shema Mefodesh, but not a Kinui, so unlike the two dinim that Reb Yehuda had said in the name of Shmuel. So here is where, in the Yerushalmi over here brings a story, I mentioned it yesterday, although I got a little bit of the detail wrong, that the Shlokish one time is riding a donkey, and there's a kusi riding or walking alongside him, and over cursing and reviling Hashem name, and over Rish Lakish is having to tear Kriya, so you see that it applies even when it's a kusi, and again, even when it's not a shem amfurish, and finally Rish Lakish gets tired of it, and he gets off his donkey and gives the guy a punch in the chest, and he says, what do you think? Does your mother have the ability to make as many clothes as you would need for me to replace all the ones that I'm having to tear because of you? Yeah.
What you're saying.
If you're talking about as Yid, Yid needs to learn to be more careful. That's all. You know, if you're talking about a Goy, what can you do to him, you know? If you're a Shlokish, I guess you can give him a zest in the chest. But, yeah. Okay. Onward. Okay. The Gemara deals now with like this. The Mishnah tells us that besides the fact that you're not allowed to curse Hashem's name, then it starts talking about the various dinim of Avodah Zarah, what exactly a person is chayev for. So you have those things that a person is chayev misa, worshipping Avodah Zarah in the various ways that it's usually worshipped, or things that are unique to Hashem, and so forth. And then it talks about the idea that you're also not allowed to swear in the name of an Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara brings in this connection then that the Gemara says that we're going to have a piece in a little bit that you're not allowed to make a partnership with a goy either, because then he's going to end up swearing in the name of his Avodah Zarah. So actually rather what it is, sorry, the context of this next piece over here is not quite that yet. It's more, the Gemara discusses, so the Mishnah says that a person is chayiv misa for worshipping Avodah Zarah with any of various maisim, as well as also for saying about the Avodah Zarah that it's his God. So the question is, why should he be chayiv for that? That's not a maisim. So the Gemara explains that because we have a pasuk by the eagle where it says Vayishtachvu loy vayuz b'choloy, they vowed to it and they sacrificed it, Vayomru, and they said Eilei Elokecha Yisrael, this is your God Yisrael. So you see, therefore, that you have a comparison between bowing to it and sacrificing to it, which is unquestionably Avodah Zarah, and Chayav Misa, as the Gemara works out from Sukkim. So therefore, we see that saying to it that it's their God is also the equivalent of that. So now the Gemara brings in this connection, speaking of that pasuk, Eilei Elokecha Yisrael, Il Molech Vav Shebehe'elucha, if it hadn't been for the Vav in the word He'elucha, Nischaivu Senem Sho Yisrael Kloya, then the enemies of the Jewish people, meaning the Jewish people themselves, would have deserved to be destroyed completely. Meaning, because the word He'elucha is in plural, Eilei Elokecha Yisrael, they say, these are your gods Yisrael, Asher He'elucha, that they brought you out in the Eretz Mitzrayim. Which amounts to, therefore, they're not denying Hashem completely. They're combining Hashem together with Lahavdil the Eagle. But had they completely denied Hashem, then their taka would have been completely destroyed. Anaf Yosef points, but at least they didn't deny Hashem altogether. Anaf Yosef points out over here a point that actually you do have in Nehemiah, you have a whole thing over there with Levim in that time said a long tefillah to Hashem. We have parts of it here and there in davening, but they're like recapping all of Jewish history, the 1,000 years of Jewish history up to their time, and talking about how over and over we did Averis, and Hashem had Rachmanos on us over and over, and now Hashem, please have Rachmanos on us in our situation now. So they mention the eagle as well, and they say that the people said, Ze'elekach Asher Helcha Mimitzrayim, that he took you out. So why over there are they saying it in singular, and here the Gemara is saying, and the Pasuk in Chumash says they said it in plural. So the Anaf Yosef gives one answer that maybe the Erev Rab said Helcha in the singular. They Taka wanted to throw out Hashem altogether and replace him only with the eagle. Whereas the rest of the Jews are not going to go that far. They're just going to be Meshatef. They're going to combine together. So that's one answer. There's a couple of other answers as well. Why the difference in wording? Anyway, the point is, at least the fact that they said Ha'alucha, that they're not denying Hashem completely, that saved them from total destruction. And the Gemara points out Ketanoi. There's actually a Machloikas Tanoim about whether that's what saved them. And what the Vav in Ha'alucha means, what this plural means in Ha'alucha. So Acherim, which usually means Reb Meir says, yeah, exactly as Reb Yechanan said, Molei Vav Shabbat Ha'alucha, if it hadn't been for the Vav of Ha'alucha, this Chai was Sinem Shor Yisrael Kloya, then the enemies of the Jewish people, and the Jewish people themselves would have deserved to be destroyed because they had completely denied Hashem. But Amalei Reb Shimon Yechoi, but Reb Shimon Yechoi says to Acherim, says to Reb Meir, what are you talking about? You're saying that it was okay for them to do that, or at least that it wasn't so bad. Anybody who combines together the name of Hashem and anything else, Nekar min ha'olam, is uprooted from the world. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Bilti la'Hashem levadai. You can only worship Hashem alone, without any combinations. So what does this pasuk? So in other words, it's not any better that they said ha'alucha than if they had said ha'alfa. Ella, so rather, Reb Shimon says, what does that phrase mean? It means she'ivu le'lekois harve. They desired many gods. It's not just that they had the eagle. Which, by the way, there are a couple of Mephoshim who talk about that the eagle was not, strictly speaking, in and of itself of a desire. They meant it as more a replacement for Moshe, as their guide, whatever, that Ramban talks about it, Barichus, on Chumash. But now, Reb Shimon is saying, they actually desired and accepted on themselves many other gods as well. And when they're saying ha'alucha, they're referring to all of them. So Maharsha explains, in other words, like this. Reb Shimon is saying when a person believes in shnius, a person believes in two co-equal gods, that's a problem, a nekum and a olam. What it means is when we say ivula the kois harbe, what it means is they believe there's one Hashem who created everything, but they believed, as we find the Gemara mentions about the goyim, the korulei lekode alakaya, they thought of Hashem as he's the first cause of everything, but then he delegated to a lot of lower powers. So that's what it means. Ivula the kois harbe, they figured Hashem is too high up for us, and we need various intermediaries. So therefore, Reb Shimon is saying, as bad as that is, it's not as bad as combining, as literally saying that there were two co-equal powers in the first place, which then Nekum and Olam. Maharsha goes on to say, by the way, that this is when Moshe is davening on behalf of the Jewish people, look, you're making me their leader. And therefore, so now you're allowing the Jewish people to make that exact same mistake again, that they were going to think that you delegated it through me. So therefore, don't do that. Have your Shechina lead us directly so that they don't think this kind of thing anymore. This Meshat of Shem Shemayim B'Dorachah, by the way, comes up in Halacha. We can see from what Reb Shimon is saying that a Yid is definitely not allowed to do that. So, for example, Christianity, which is a classic example of Shittuf, is no question of a desire for a Yid. It's Machlokas Rishonim, whether it's a desire for the Goyim themselves. Here, we just learned about Shev Mitzvah Nenoyach for the last couple of days. Are they able to believe in their religion and still be in keeping with Shev Mitzvahs Menoyach? One way of looking at it, and the Rambam, for example, writes that they're outright Oda Avodah Zarah, is no, they're not allowed to do Shittuf either. Nekum and Olam, period. The most they can do is maybe they can swear, as Gemara is going to talk about soon, they can swear in the name of Hashem and something else, let's say, but not to actually believe in it.
We're allowed to teach a Christian
Moshe Rabbeinu. We're allowed to teach them, unquestionably. We learned yesterday that
we'd have to tell them.
So that's the thing. According to the Rambam, we would have to tell them it's flat out of a desarah. There's no getting around it. There are Rishonim who learn that this whole thing of Meshach of Shem Shemayim V'Dorachah is that they have a heter for Shittuf. They have a heter to combine together, and Chassidus it talks about in a number of places that there's a logical basis for that. We get our hashpah directly from Eivishter, as we just said. For us, there's no alakod alakaya Hashem. We get everything directly from Hashem. They talk to get through their sarim. So there is a certain logic to them saying that they believe in Hashem, and they also believe in the sar or this whatever through which they get their hashpah. So therefore, there are Rishonim who learn that that kind of thing is not an issue for them. The Meiri, for example, actually says that the Goyim of his times already, the Christians of Europe of his times, he said, can be considered Chassidei Umos HaOlam, and according to him, they keep the Shev Mitzvahs. Never mind how violent and whatever they were, and in his times, they actually expelled the Jews from France. You're talking late 1200s, early 1300s. In his time, there was one of the major Gerushim from France, and still he says that the Goyim of his time, by and large, can be considered observant of the Shev Mitzvahs in Anayach. Anyway. Next, the Gemara goes on to talk about then that if a person swears in the name of Avodah Zarah, does he get malchus for it? So the Gemara talks about that not necessarily would he, because it's called lav shel klolos. Sometimes you have one lav in the Torah that includes a number of different things you're not allowed to do, and there's a general rule that a person doesn't get malchus for such a thing. So the Gemara gives an example of that where we have one pasuk that teaches us many different dinim, and a person doesn't get malchus for violating them. So Tanya, we learn in a braisa. First of all, how do we know a person eats meat from an animal before its life force leaves it? Shuba lo seser, he's being over on a lo seser. Tamad lo seichel al hadam. The pasuk says, do not eat al hadam on or with the blood. So meaning, in other words, now there's actually a bit of a difference between a yid and a goy in that regard. A yid checks an animal, he's allowed at that point to cut off a piece even while the animal is still moving around. But then he can't eat it until the animal actually stops moving. A goy would not even be allowed to cut it off at that point. For him, it would be Eivim and Achai. The difference is, for a yid, once he accomplished shchita, then the animal is considered dead. So you have, because of so klal adam, then fine, he can't eat from it as long as the animal is moving. But it's not Eivim and Achai, at least, anymore. As opposed to, for a goy, the definition is when the animal is dead, if it's still moving around after the shchita, then for him, it's not dead yet. So therefore, so he'd be also to eat from it. There's a famous thing that the Mishnah of Melech brings in his sefer of Drashas, Parshas Drachim. He says this was the crux of one of the arguments between Yosef and his brothers. We know that Yosef told on his brothers that they're doing a number of things that he considered wrong by Yovel Yosef's Tibosim Ra, and one of them is he accused them of eating Eivim and Achai. So the Parshas Drachim explains they were doing this kind of thing. Why? Because they held we're already considered Bnei Yisrael. So then we have the rule of Bnei Yisrael, and we're allowed to do that kind of thing. Whereas Yosef held was still considered Bnei Noach. Look, the Torah hasn't been given yet. Therefore, we should be also to do that, and therefore he's telling on them to Yaakov. Okay. So that's one din we learn from this pasuk. Dover Acher, another explanation. Don't eat the meat when the blood is still of korbanos. Don't eat the meat of the korbanos when the blood is still in the basin and has not yet been sprinkled or applied to the mizbeach. Mefoshim, by the way, point out on a pshat level, here the Gemara is bringing a number of halachas we learn from this. Mefoshim explain on a pshat level that you would have the goyim in those times would do this kind of ritual. They would kill an animal, and then they'd have the blood in a basin nearby in order to attract shadim and other koichas atoma to it, which have an affinity for blood, and that way, like, they can, so to speak, share with them in the meal and have their company and be able to talk to them and get these shadim or whatever to do their bidding. So therefore, the Torah is telling us nothing doing, because that's a shade of Avodah Zarah. But here the Gemara is mentioning several halachas that we learned from that. Next, Reb Doisoimer, Minayin Shein Mavrin Halarugei Beisin. How do we know you don't do a Surah Havra for people executed by Beisin? Now, we learned earlier that the relatives don't even sit Shiva for them. But now you have, when a person's relative has passed away, you usually have the first meal after the Levaya is not, they don't eat their own food. Instead, other people bring them food. It's called the Surah Havra. So now you don't do that for Harugi Beisin. Tam Ablema, Lois Sotho Al Adam. Therefore, the Pasuk says don't eat on the blood, meaning on because of the person whose blood was shed. Now, of course, there's nothing in the words Al Hadam that specifically means somebody who was killed by Beistin, but Rashi says it's Misvara. We would assume that it means Haruge Beistin. We already said that we deny them various kinds of kavod as kapara, and therefore this is one part of that. In addition, again, we did also learn the relatives don't even sit Shiva for them, so no Shiva, then no Siddha Safara. Another one, Rabbi Akiva, in the Minayin of Sanhedrin, Shehogu was Sanhefesh. How do we know that when the Sanhedrin has executed somebody, Shein Toim and Klum Kolosi Ayoim, they don't eat anything that entire day? Also, Talmud Lomel Osefu Al Adam, this is another thing we learn, don't eat on the blood, meaning at the same time as a person's blood was shed where he was executed. Ion Yaakov points out an interesting thing. A Mishnah in Makkos tells us that Rabbi Akiva, say that if we had been on a Beis Din back when they were judging Din and Nefashos, nobody would have ever been executed, because they say we would cross-examine the Edim so minutely that eventually there would come up some discrepancy, some contradiction in their Edus, and then we would throw out the whole Edus. Well, then Rabbi Akiva then is going L'shitosei, that says that now if a Sanhedrin did execute somebody, it means they didn't do a good enough job, according to him, of cross-examining the Edom and causing the case to be thrown out, and therefore they should have to fast that whole day. No, the Taplonis is if they do once in every 7 years, or even according to one opinion, once in every 7 years. Yeah, we'll get to that in Marcus eventually, Vez Deshem. But no, Rabbi Akiva is saying beyond that, the Tana of the Mishnah over there says that if a Beis Din kills once every 7 years, or according to one opinion, 7 years, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Taifun go further and say if we had been on a Beis Din, nobody would have ever been executed because we would cross and we'd start asking the Edom all kinds of irrelevant questions and things about details that nobody can be possible would possibly pay attention to, and eventually they would end up contradicting one another, and you throw out the whole Aegis.
Why do you have to go to Slitz?
Because Rabbi Akiva doesn't want that a Yid should have to be killed by Beis Din. And the Mishnah, actually, one of the other Tanoim says to Rabbi Akiva, you know what, you do that, you mean, Ma'abah Shosh Kedamim B'Yisrael, then nobody's going to be afraid of being executed by Beis Din, and therefore people will just go and kill and do other Averis with impunity. But this is how Rabbi Taifun, well, we're going to see later in the Masechta, Rabbi Taifun is always always the defender of the Yidin, so he seems to be going L'shitasa, he always wants to defend even the worst Baal Avera and not have to have him executed by Beis Din. There are certain cases where it talks about later in the sector where there are certain cases where they put him in jail and feed him a starvation diet. Yeah, there is that. Maybe Rabbi Akiva would agree that we do that in that case. Fine. Okay. And the halacha is not like Rabbi Akiva in that regard. Anyhow, the halacha is fine. Beis Din does have to cross examine the Edim, but there comes a point when they were, if everything checked out in the interrogation, then that's it. We go ahead with the procedure. All right. Anyway, so that's another thing that we learn from Lo Sotel Al Adam. Amar Rav Yochanan, Zohar Lo Ben Sora Remora Minayin. And also, where do we have a warning for the Ben Sora Remora? Where do we have? We know the Torah tells us about the punishment to the Ben Sora Remora in Parashat Kisaytse, but we have a rule, like Onash Elin Ken Hizir. There can't be a punishment unless there's a warning someplace in the Torah, don't do this. So where is the warning also? Lo Sotel Al Adam, don't eat in a way of blood. Don't eat in a way that's going to cause yourself to be killed, or also in the next parak, when we talk about Ben Sora Remora, it talks about that ultimately the Ben Sora Remora is if he keeps up his habits, his gluttonous habits and everything, then eventually he's going to become a highwayman. He's going to go rob people on the roads and kill them, and therefore, like the Torah wants to head that off before that happens. So that's also what Sotel Al Adam, don't eat in a way where eventually, where a person shouldn't eat in a way where eventually he's going to become a murderer himself. So we learn all these five things from this pasuk. In addition, there's also Gemara and Brachas that tells us, we also learn from this pasuk, that you can't eat before you daven. Don't eat before you daven regarding your own blood, regarding your own life. A couple of interesting ideas that Mephoshim talk about how all these, the point is, again, the Gemara is saying this is an example of Lav Sheba Klolos, so therefore a person doesn't get Malkus for violating any of these things, because it's a bunch of Lav and they're included together in one Pasuk. There are a couple of interesting ideas that Mephoshim talk about how these things tie together and how we can douch in them all from one Pasuk. The Malbim on the Pasuk points out, and the word al has a lot of meanings in Lashon Kodesh. It can mean on, it can mean next to, it can mean because of, it can mean after, and each one of them, you take the word al in a different way, then you result in one of these derashas. So lo sotel al hadam, don't eat when the blood is still next to you in the mizrach. Lo sotel al hadam, don't eat because of the blood, namely because of the blood that was shed that day. Lo sotel al hadam, don't eat after the blood was shed. So therefore, Beis Din has to fast the whole day, and so forth. Each one of these ways, we can take the word al in a different sense, and that yields a different drasha. Yeah. Rav Hirsch has, in his Pirush, he points out that all these things also tie together in the sense that all of them, the Torah is telling you, don't eat like a behemoth. So each of these things is a different way of eating like a behemoth, not paying attention to the sacredness of human life, not paying attention even an animal's life has a certain degree, has to be treated with a certain degree of respect. The Ben Sora Remora, of course, is eating like a glutton. So all of them tie together in that way as well. And in addition, Torah Tzmima points out that our Gemara didn't bring the one about not eating before you daven, because he says that's included in the one, don't eat while the blood is still in the mizrach. Tefillos makom tmidim tikkunim l'tor tefillos are instead of the korbanos. So therefore, so the same way as you can't eat from the korban before you sprinkle the blood, the same way we can't be eating before we daven. Now, you do have, of course, the famous thing in Ayom Yom with Rebbetzin Rivka, where she had to eat before davening, and the Tzemach Tzedek told her better to eat in order to daven, and to daven in order to eat, and there we do have the concept of eating a little fabaisin before davening so that we can daven with her with a clear mind, but not to have an actual meal or something. further on, again, the Gemara talks about this point about not swearing in the name of Avodah Zarah and so forth, and the Gemara establishes that you're also not allowed to cause that a goy is going to mention his Avodah Zarah. Actually, the Gemara mentions before that, the Gemara mentions also, you're not even allowed to use an Avodah Zarah as a landmark. Like to say, meet me next to this temple of Avodah Zarah. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Amar Avur Deshmul, also Adam, she asks a shrut for some over the a person is not allowed to make a partner, a yid is not allowed to make a partner, a business partnership with a goy. Shemi Yishayev Lo Shruah, because it may happen in the course of the partnership that the goy is one time chayev a shruah in court. The Nishba, but it's Chachavim Shalayim, is going to swear by the name of his Getchka, Vatar Omer, Lo Yisham Al-Picha, and the Torah is saying it should not be heard on your mouth, it shouldn't be heard, the name of Avodah Zarah shouldn't be heard, it shouldn't be made to be heard because of you. So Tosfos actually, Tosfos and various other Rishonim discuss various details about that. First of all, Tosfos says sometimes you may have that where if you yourself are going to if you're going to suffer a loss, then sometimes you may be allowed to. It's called matzul miyadam. You have a concept where sometimes the Gemara talks about in the Masechta Avodah Zarah, for example, that certain dinim with the Chachamim Aser because of a connection to Avodah Zarah, certain things are sometimes mutter because matzul miyadam, because you're saving your own money from their hands. Talks about at the beginning of Avodah Zarah, for example, you're not supposed to do certain kinds of business with a goy a few days before their chagas, because then they're going to be grateful and go thank their getchkes, but then you have cases where it's allowed because matzul miyadam. So Tosfos says here also sometimes there might be times when it is mutter to have the goy swear. Also Tosfos points out as a practical matter, by their times where the goyim were Christian, the goyim in Europe were Christians, they weren't worshipping a zillion gods like the Greeks and the Romans did. Tosfos points out when they swear in court, they're not going to swear in the name of an actual of a desire, they're going to swear in the name of one of their saints. Fine, their saints are whatever they are. Saints, tzaddikim, they aren't, but they're not outright of a desire either, and therefore if a goy swears in the name of saint whatever, then it's not so bad, and therefore that's not included necessarily in what we're saying over here, that you can't make a partnership with a goy. The Gemara continues, talking about this point that you're not allowed to mention names of Avodah Zarah. Ki also Ula, when Ula one time came to Babel, Ula used to, where we find all of Ashas, that Ula used to regularly travel back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Babel, so he would report to the Chachamim of Babel what they had been learning in the Yeshivas of Eretz Yisrael and vice versa, and that way he kept up a link between them. So one time when Ula came, Bus the Kalnavoy, then he stayed overnight in a town called Kalnavoy. Now where does the name Kalnavoy come from? Nevoy was the name of one of the major Avodah Zarah's above all. So the place was called Kal Nevoy after what Kal means. I don't know, but Nevoy is named after that Getchke. What? The mother of Avraham is Count Amaslai, the grandfather of Avraham, and his mother is Amaslai, that's Kal Nevoy. Yeah, maybe Kal Nevoy maybe is related as well. I don't know. But yeah, this place was called Kal Nevoy anyway. Omalei Rava Vahecha Bosmar. So afterwards, Rava asked him, Rebbe, where'd you sleep last night? Omalei B'Kal Nevoy. So Ola tells him the name of the place. Omalei, so Rava says, how could you mention the name of the place? Doesn't the pasuk say you're not allowed to mention the names of other gods, and Nevoy is a foreign god, how can you mention its name? By the way, speaking of these saints, actually, on the Shabbat, like of all the Tanyas that were printed in various places that are San this and San to that, that I've always directed that they should take out, that they should all take that out and just have the name itself. So you have Diego and Francisco and then Jose and so forth, rather than without the San. You also have, for example, what? Say what? The Rebbe would cross out an envelope, the San or the Santa. Okay, same idea, yeah. You have one exception, I guess, maybe is with Monica, where Levitansky, although Shalom renamed it Simcha Monica. So, yeah. Anyway, another example of it that I've heard of, actually, is you have a large city in New Zealand that's named for a Goyish house of worship, and the Jews there call the place Chichi, rather than calling it by its full name, yeah. Anyway, you have other examples of that, by the way, as well. In some place in Ukraine or White Russia, for example, there was a town called Belya Tserkov, which means White Church. So the Jews used to call them said Schwarze Timmer. Yeah, as the Gemara is going to say now, you're supposed to make fun of Avodah Zarah. Yeah.
And after a while, my father would just put S.
After a while, your father would put S. Yeah. What I've read is actually, as far as this Belia Tserkov, so two things. First of all, they for at one point they printed some Svartim over there. They couldn't put Shvaitza Tima on the title pages. The Goyim would notice. So instead they called it Sodia Lovon. So instead of white church, white field, they called it. Then I read something else interesting as well, that in Gittin, the din is in a get, you have to write the name of the place and any other popular names that it's known by. So here what they would write is Sodaloven and any other names that it might be known by. Again, they can't openly write Shvaitza Tima over there. What if a goy gets a hold of it? But you'd get the Hanetza. Okay, it's a bit, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the question is, so how can you mention the name of this Nevoi? Amalei, so Ola tells him, Hochi Amar Rabbi Yechanan, you should know that Rabbi Yechanan said, Kol Avodah Zarah Maksuva BaTorah. Any Avodah Zarah mentioned in the Torah, Mutar L'Hazkir Shma, you're allowed to mention its name. And since Nevoi is mentioned, now we don't mean how Nevoi, I don't know if how Nevoi is necessarily named for that, but we actually find Nevoi mentioned as the name of a Getchke in Yeshaya, as the Gemara is going to quote now, so therefore you're allowed to say it. The idea being, the Rebbe explains in a sikha, once it's mentioned in the Torah, means it's basically, it's been emptied of any tumah that it has in it. It became now part of Torah, it became part of Kedusha. Now when we mention it in the Torah, we're not mentioning at all as any form of respect to it, obviously, because Torah is the polar opposite of Avodah Zarah. Therefore, all we're mentioning it for is just to make fun of it, as the Gemara is going to say, or otherwise emptied of any connotation of Avodah Zarah, and therefore that kind of thing is mutter. The Rebbe explains in a similar sense why we have last week's parasha was called Balak. We don't name things after Rishoyim, same idea, because you're not thinking of Balak as the historical king, you're thinking of Balak as the guy who tried to get the Jewish people cursed and failed miserably. Okay, so where does it say the name Nevoi? So the Kedektiv, you have a pasuk in Yeshaya, Hora Beil Koresh Nevoi. Baal, which is another one of Bubbles' Getchkes, has crouched down, and Nevoi is falling down. So therefore we see, so Bel and Nevoi are examples of such Getchkes that can be mentioned. We have a few others that I mentioned here and there in Tanakh, and we're saying then you're allowed to mention them. So in this connection, speaking of that pasuk, Kora Bel, Kodesh Nevoi, Amar Rav Nachman, Kol Letzenusa Asira. Any kind of Letzonus is also, any kind of mockery, making fun of things is also. The Gemara mentions in other places that a Letz is somebody who's not Makabel Pnei Shechina, and the Gemara in a number of places has horrible things to say about a Letz. Because you have to have, it's one thing to have fun, it's one thing to have enjoyment in life, but to go and mock and make fun of things is a very bad midah. It causes the person to be careless about and to think less about the things in life that are important. So all of that is also chutz miletzanusa d'avodas v'chavim d'sharia, with the exception of mocking avodah zarah, which is mutter. D'chtiv, as we have that pasuk, kora veil kodesh nevoi. Now, on the one, in the simple pshat, we would understand that kora and kodesh means that they're crouching and they're falling over. But we mean more than that. Kora veil, we take to mean that veil is crouching down like to go to the bathroom. And Kodesh Nevoi means Kodesh, it actually translates Nitraz, like he's soiling himself, like he can't even get to the bathroom in time, and it's squirting out all over the place. That's Kodesh. So we see the Pasuk is describing Bel and Nevoi as though they're like desperately trying to get to the bathroom in time. That's an example of Litzonus of Avodah Zarah. And the pasuk continues, Korsu choru yachdav, they squirt it out, and they crouch down together, lo yochlu malet masa, they could not relieve themselves of the load. So in other words, like they couldn't hold in the load of what they have in their stomachs, and it's squirting out and coming out involuntarily and getting all over them. So we see that the pasuk is speaking of them. Now Baal and Nevoi are not people or animals or whatever that actually do such things, but the pasuk is talking about them as though they do, showing that we make fun of Avodah Zarah that way. Uchtiv. You have another example of this kind of thing, talking about the Eglei HaZohav that Yerovam made. The Navi says, La Eglois Base Oven, about the calves of Base Oven. Base Oven is an actual name of a town in Eretz Yisrael, but Oven also means falsehood, so the Navi is using it as a derogatory name for Base El, which is one of the places where these calves were located. So La Eglois Base Oven, because of the calves of Base Oven, meaning Base El, Yoguru Shchan Shomerin, the neighbors of Shomerin, which is the capital of the Aseres HaShvatim, are going to be worried. Because their people are going to mourn for them. Eventually, Sancheirov is going to conquer that land and take these Eglei Azov with him as spoils. Uchmarov, all of Yagidu, all of Yagilu, And it's priests, the priests of these Eglei Azahav will be happy over it, because now finally, our Kvoidoi, Kigolam Imenu, because of its Kvoidoi that went into Golos from it. So the simple meaning in this, in other words, that they're gonna be bothered and distressed over the fact that the honor of these Eglei Azahav has been taken away. But now, I'll take Kvoidoi, Ela Kvoidoi. Don't read Kvoidoi, it's honor. Why would we ascribe honor to these Getchkes? But rather Kvoidoi, it's heavy burden. So like now, the priests are finally happy. Oh, the Eglei Azahav are finally rid of the burden of the waste that they had in them that they couldn't get out, like we were saying before about Bel and Navi. So we see again that the Navi, you know, these Eglei Azahav are not actual living creatures, and yet the Navi talks about them as though they were, as though they're living creatures that have a load inside them that they can't get out, and the Navi talks about them that way. So we see this is another example of making fun of Avodah Zarah. Rashi, this Gemara is also in Megillah. Rashi there explains a little bit differently and says that it means Kumar of all of Yogilu means the priests that until now were always happy to be serving these Eglei Azahav, now they're going to be mourning. Now they're going to be mourning Kiovel all of Amai. But either way, the point is our Kvodik Golam Imenu refers to the waste, the metaphorical waste that's inside them that they couldn't get out, and now they're finally rid of. So we see that the Navi is talking about them in this mocking terminology, as though like they're constipated and they can't get it out, and then when they get it out, then they soil themselves with it. Talking more on the subject of Avodah Zarah and then how the Jewish people were worshipping it at various times, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, my dichtiv, here's another pasuk from Hosea. What does it mean? Va'atah yesifu lachto. He says now they continue doing more Averis. First, he had talked about how they seceded from the Aseret HaShevatim, and that was from they seceded from Yehuda and Binyamin, and that was bad enough. And now he goes on to say, V'ata, now, Yesifu Lachto, they continue to sin. V'yasu lahem Asecha, they make for themselves cast idols. Mikaspam, from their own money, they pay their own money towards this. Kisvunam, according to their understanding, Atsabim, idols, Masecharoshim, that are made by craftsmen. So what's this phrase, kisvunam atzabim? I don't know, by me, by the way, it's pointed with a base, bisvunam atzabim. It may be by you also, in the pasuk it's actually kisvunam with a chaf. Anyway, what is this kisvunam atzabim, according to their understanding, idols? So what does that mean? Melamech kol echad ve'echad osad musirose means that each person was making a little image, a little miniature image of his idol, of umanicha v'kisoy, and putting in his pocket. And whenever he remembers it, he would take it out of his pocket, out of his bosom, and hug him and kiss it, because of how much he loved the Avodah Zarah. So we're saying, in other words, the point is, it's bad enough that they had temples of Avodah Zarah. Now each person has their own little pocket size of Avodah Zarah, where every time they want kisvunam, Maharsha points out, some beis and mem can interchange, because those are both letters that are formed by the lips. So therefore, instead, we can read the word kisvunam, which means like their image. So now they're taking the large Avodah Zarah that they have in their temple, and they're making a miniature pocket-sized image of it and keeping it around with them all the time. So that's the problem. So the Navi is criticizing them for that. It's not bad enough that you go to the temples to worship your Avodah Zarahs, but you even have your little pocket-sized ones that you carry with you all the time. Now, my zolche odem agolam yishokun, that pasuk finishes off, the Navi criticizes them, those who sacrifice men kiss calves. Sometimes you have, nowadays you hear sometimes people use that phrase to talk about the animal rights activists, how often they're kissing and loving the animals and meanwhile showing how much they hate human beings. But anyway, here the Gemara is looking for a different explanation of it. Amr Rabbi Yitzchak Dvei Rabbi Ami, so Rabbi Yitzchak from the yeshiva of Rabbi Ami said, the priests of these Avodah Zarah would cast their eyes on people who have lots of money. They want to be able to get their money out of them. Umar even asag golem, so they would starve the calves. They had the calves, besides for the Eglei Azahav that they were worshipping, they also had live calves that they would worship as well. So they would starve those animals. Va'osin musat abeyim, then they would make an image of each of these rich guys, umar midin osin betzad egusehim, and put the image next to the animal's feed, next to the animal's trough where it feeds from. So this way, in other words, so this way, the animal in its animal brain starts thinking that these are the ones who are going to feed them. Eventually, they know this guy is going to be passing by, they bring the animal outside. Someone when the animal sees this person whose image it's been seeing all this time near its feed stall, rots and achareim, then the animal would run after the person, and nuzzle against him, like, feed me. Now the priests have their opening. They would say, huh, look at that. Avodah Zarah, chofetz v'chof. The Avodah Zarah desires you. Yovibi zabeach atzmei lo. Come sacrifice yourself to it. So that would be how that help as far as the money? So Maharshal says two possibilities. They may have had a law back then that anybody who sacrificed to Avodah Zarah, then his money goes to the Avodah Zarah temple. The other possibility is these guys don't want to be killed, so they would buy their way out of it by paying money to the priest. However, Amar Rava, so Rava says it's a nice story, but Hai Zoyche Adam Agolam Yishakun, then in that case, the pasuk is backwards. It says those who sacrifice men kiss calves, then it should be the other way around. Agolam Yishakun, Mizvayach Adam Yiboyle. The calves come and kiss the person, and now because of that, the person is sacrificed. So, Ela Amar Rava, so no, Rava says what it means is that these priests would say, Kol HaZevech is B'noi Lavar Es Kechavim, anybody who would sacrifice his son to one of these Getchkes, Omrim Loi, they would tell him, Doran Godel Hikrif Loi, look at this, you brought a big present, a tremendous present to the Getchke, Yogav Yishak Loi, you now have the privilege, you can come and kiss the Getchke. So that was all a psychological manipulation to get people to think that Avodah Zarah is something important and beautiful and whatever, and the Navi is criticizing for them. How could you Jewish people be doing such things?
They knew about
Pavlovian. So we'll talk more tomorrow, actually. We'll get into the Gemara tomorrow, Best Hashem, that even to begin with, the Yidden knew good and well that all of this is nonsense and they only got into it because of ulterior motives. We'll learn more about that tomorrow, Best Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola to Zayin Tammuz. We learned yesterday, we started learning that the Gemara tells us that in the future there's going to be David is going to rule over us, and the Gemara says that there's going to be Kaser or Palgi Kaser, a Kaser and a Vice Kaser. Now, what's the name Kaser itself represents something new and novel? Because the original Kaser, Julius Caesar, how did he get his name? Because his mother died in childbirth, and they found him alive in the womb, so Tosfos brings, so they cut open her womb, and that was the original Caesarian section. That's where the name comes from, Caesarian, as in Julius Caesar. So then, the Latin word for cutting is tater or something like that, which is related to the word Caesar. So therefore, because of that, all the later emperors of Rome got the name Caesar from there. So now, then the Rebbe points out that the Mashiach is called Kaser because you have his job as Yucham Nuchamas Hashem, and that means it's going to be something supernatural. It's going to cause a change in the entire world. So therefore, he's called Kaser in the sense like something completely out of left field, like the way the original Kaser was born. And then Palgi Kaser, when he's a vice Kaser, that represents, besides being a king, he also has the job of a Nasi, that he's going to teach the whole Jewish people and show them the way of Hashem, which that there's not so much of a chiddush in, so then he's only a half Kaser in that regard. Okay, continuing with Hochas Tzitzis, we talked about when you're buying Tzitzis from a Goy. Now, what about if you're sending Tzitzis to somebody else through a Goyish courier? Then you have to seal it up. Choysim b'seil choysim. You have to have a seal within a seal. Because otherwise there's a concern that the goy may switch them out for other threads that were not made l'shem tzitzis. You have other examples in halacha where you're sending meat to somebody through a goyish courier. You have to do choysim b'seil choysim. You see, for example, nowadays the restaurants, you go and order a pizza, you go and order a whatever, they also have to have choysim b'seil choysim, otherwise you can't trust it. What? Like what? Okay. That thing where the guy switched out, yeah. Mam Lawyers, by the way, mentions an interesting thing in that regard. He mentions that there was a place where they had the minhag when they're sending meat to the goyish courier, what they would do is they would engrave on the meat itself, they would engrave the word kosher. And that way it would be a simon. The problem was eventually the goyim learned how to copy the word. So then they came up with a new hamsah, they'll put the name of the parasha of the week. That'll change from week to week, so that way they won't be able to do it. Except that one time he goes on to say that a goy sliced off the layer that had that and attached it to another piece of meat, so then they had to make a takana, they have to make sure the words are actually inscribed in the meat and not just sitting on top of something, but yeah. Okay, so Bamedvar Amurim is only when the goy would benefit from the exchange, but if he's not going to have any benefit from it at all, then we're not worried that he's going to exchange it just lahach shalos Yisrael. This kind of thing is also negea. For example, in offices, you put meat in the break room fridge or whatever. When do you have a concern that the goy may swap it out? Why not? One of the factors that comes into that is Saka, whether he's going to have hanah from swapping it out. So sometimes Saka, you have to be very careful, and you may not be able to of just leave it just like that, without choysim, besay choysim in the company break room fridge, there may be a problem with that. Anyway.
There's this story about Neil on the plane that the guy goes to the bathroom and he lifts his meal. And when he comes back, he says, "Both of them is out of the eye, and I cannot eat it himself." And the guy is begging him, "Why are you not eating your meat?" Then he's telling him, "I switched the ham in my sandwich to."
Interesting. Anyway, the Altareba goes on to say this is only when you're sending unspun strings or that they're not separated into separate tzitzis strings if it's one long string. If it's already made like the way tzitzis strings are, twined and separated into the four long strings, then there's not such a problem that the goy is going to swap them out because he probably doesn't have other strings like that who makes threads like that except for tzitzis. So therefore, then you wouldn't have a problem and then you could sell them. Then you would be able to send them with a goy. So returning to, I guess, as a practical matter, I don't know, halacha l'maisa, this is something to ask the Rav, as we have over here, for example, but the pashtus sounds like then, if let's say, for example, you're buying tzitzis strings from a Jewish seller on Amazon, like we talked about yesterday, and of course it's being sent by goyish couriers, you wouldn't necessarily have a problem if you're buying actually ready-made tzitzis strings, because again, then who else is going to have strings like that? By the same token, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, the same way you find strings like that in the street, again, if they're made as tzitzis strings, twined and divided into four, then it's kosher because, again, they're surely made of the same tzitzis.